Welcome to Sex Unshackled. I am Becky Crepsley Fox, and this podcast is where sexuality and spirituality meet. Today on Sex Unshackled, I have Debbie with me. Sex Debbie is a sex educator in the Southwest UK. Married mum of two, she delivers workshops to all from young people in educational settings to parents and couples. Alongside working with brands and workplaces, Debbie feels we all have a need for pleasure-focused, positive, and inclusive sex re-education. Debbie, I'm so happy you have joined me here today. Could you please tell the listeners what brought you to this work?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So I have always been fascinated by sex from like a youngster to the point that it was quite, I suppose, shameful for a lot of people. My parents certainly were embarrassed about it. It was not just sex itself, but as a physical act, but the way people sort of talk about it in whispers and wouldn't talk to children about it. And, you know, I knew there was this thing that people were joking about and giggling about, but no one really discussed it with me. And so I took that very much upon myself to find out more. I met a friend not long ago who I went to primary school with, who said I used to bring books from the library, apparently, and teach people. I used to tear out all the agony aunt pages of magazines, and I just had a real thirst for it. And that continued on. I went to sort of university. I did paid for my way through university by working for Anne Summers and different ways and of sort of discovering the world of sex through conversations and just being that person that people can ask questions. And I always say when I talk to young people, I always say, oh, I think I was born without that embarrassment part of my brain, because I just don't get embarrassed by it. I just find it so fascinating how we all interact when it comes to sex, because it's so much more than just a physical act. It's like, yeah, it's just amazing. So that it was something that's interested me from day dot. In fact, when we had to dress up as what we wanted to be when we left school and in year 11 as leavers, I was like, well, I just bought an outfit from Anne Summers and dressed as like a sex person, because I was like, I don't really want to ask to dress as someone who talks about sex, and much to like the horror of everyone. But actually, I've stuck with my guns.
Good for you. And I find it really interesting because a lot of people that I speak to in this line of work, we do start having an interest in sex and sex education at a really young age. I actually don't think I've spoken to anyone in this line of work where they've turned 20 or they've turned 30 and the interest has suddenly developed.
That's it. So it's something that we know. And like, we know quite often that touching ourselves feels good. And what the problem is when we have parents or caregivers or adults or teachers saying, don't do that, take your hands out your pants, stop doing that. And then you think, oh gosh, okay, is there more to this? I'll just touch my body that feels nice, just like scratching an itch or touching my body in other ways. You know, actually, okay, what's wrong with this part of my body? And so, yeah, it's a straight away you've got this weird taboo. You know it feels good, you know it's interesting, but yeah, you're not supposed to say anything, and it just creates more questions than answers. And obviously nowadays we live in the day of Google, and so the answers are perhaps not what we would hope that our children would look for. So yeah, it is something I think that we're all born with that interest in, like, you know, naturally, but obviously society and the reactions from others make that path and that journey to understanding, you know, different for everyone.
Exactly right. And I know lots of people that I speak to, they don't know how to talk to their children. They don't know when to speak to their children about sex. And as you're saying, often accidentally, parents are accelerating the shame spiral by saying, oh, no, you can't touch yourself there, or you can't touch yourself like that, or stop doing that. And yeah. I know some people, they're kind of set in their ways and they haven't even consider that there could be a different way. But there is a group of people who are considering, oh, is that the right thing that I should be doing? How can I let my child know that that's an okay thing to do, but perhaps they shouldn't be doing that in front of their grandparents, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
So I think it's amazing, isn't it? I think all of us would hope that we as parents or for adults in children's lives would hope that we were a positive influence. But we've all been brought up, or or different generations been brought up with a lot of shame around sex. So if you look at my grandparents, they, like, that was a total taboo, like, no sex before marriage, we don't do that, absolutely not. My nana always says to me, well, when I was a teenager, she used to say, you know, yes, of course we had lust, but it wasn't love, and so we waited until marriage. You know, we understand that you want sex, but actually you wait till you marriage. And, you know, and these are conversations she'd only have with me as an eldest granddaughter, very privately, very quietly, and not, you know, with any men around, certainly. And then my parents sort of grew up, obviously, with that very sort of strict parenting with that generation. And they didn't know. They sort of wanted to be more positive, and they tried, but they still had their own inbuilt embarrassment. When that sex education letter came home from school, my mum, I remember just going bright red and sort of running away from it and just going, okay, right, fine. And running away. And I always tell the story in my workshops with adults of I came out of a swimming lesson once, and I came, and someone had asked me in that swimming lesson, are you a virgin? And I'd never heard of the word virgin. And so I'd gone, no, like, what's that? And everyone burst out laughing. And I thought, what the hell? Like, what's going on? So I went out and asked my mum in front of everyone in the cafe, you know, I've just been asked, what's a virgin? And my mum just, again, bright red, I'll tell you when you're older, and like gathering our stuff and rushing out of the room as quickly as she could. And then it's not her fault. She had that embarrassment. It wasn't her, you know, she was trying her best to lead us all in sort of, you know, positive, like, human beings, and bless her. But she had that inside her. She could feel that. And I think we all have that at some point. We feel that embarrassment building up and that reddening of the face when someone's asked a question and we're a bit embarrassed about it. And actually what she needed to do, in my opinion, is just to sit with that feeling and think, why am I feeling this? And say, oh, this makes me feel a bit uncomfortable. I really want to talk to you later about it, but I just need a minute just to just sit with how it makes me feel. And then later on that day, keep it that same day, or keep it fairly recently, don't wait ages. Then sort of say, right, okay, well, my mum didn't talk to me about these things, but I would really like to talk to you about things, but it also makes me uncomfortable. Maybe we've got a book that we can look it up together and make sure we sort of talk about that, you know, as a parent, and learn together and talk about how we can educate ourselves with that. So, you know, if you're uncomfortable and that awkward, using that book as an aid. But I think it's really important that we have these conversations, that we sort of recognize that it's our shame, and not projecting that then onto the next generation. And like you say, that having your hands in your pants, touching yourself, absolutely fine. It will feel nice, and that's great that it feels nice. And rather than going our instinct, which might be take your hands out your pants, because obviously it hits us somewhere that makes us feel embarrassing, actually say, right, okay, I know that feels nice, but think about the space that you're doing this in. You know, dinner time with granddad, not ideal, but why not go to your room and do that in privacy, you know, in your time? That's absolutely fine. That's your body, and your body is yours, and for you to enjoy. But, you know, it's the boundaries within that obviously protects you as a young person, and you growing up, and it stops that shame. I think it's hard, isn't it? I think if you look at every generation, they've all tried to break the cycle of their parents. We've all done it, and we all think that we're the ones that are doing it. You know, our parents were this, but our parents thought that, and their parents thought that, and so on and so forth. You know, my children will no doubt be like, oh my God, I can't believe you told us this. Like, we do like this. And it's how the world works, isn't it? Each generation progresses, and hopefully it gets more positive, more inclusive, more consensual based, more body confident, and all the rest of it as we go. But I think it's that sitting with those feelings, thinking, oh my goodness, how has that made me feel? Has that made me go, oh, uncomfortable? And actually, a child will 100% be able to read that. You know, as a child, if your mum or dad or carer or whoever, grandparent, feels uncomfortable by what you just asked or embarrassed, you can see that. Like, I still remember that virgin, because you can see it. So actually being honest about it, being honest about your feelings, it's also important for them to see that you're not right all the time, and you don't know the answers, and learning together. So yeah, that's what I think is sort of the way forward. But it's hard. It's really hard. And it takes time. And it's okay to make mistakes, as long as sort of you sort of see where perhaps you could have done it better and get better next time, or improve next time, or carry on the conversation. Because as I'm sure we'll talk about, when we talk about sex, and it's not one, the talk like it used to be. I think, again, our day, we've had the talk about the birds and the bees, and that's that. And actually, it's not one talk. It's lots of conversations and lots of different interactions over the course of their lives. And that's the same for adults as well.
So it's about when a question gets asked by your child, mm-hmm. if you're in a fluster, if you're in a panic, if you don't know what to say, it's about saying, okay, I need to just think about this. Let's talk about this evening, or let's talk about this after dinner, for example. And then best work out, well, how might I be able to get the information across in a way that feels accessible for both me and the person, the child that's asking, maybe getting a book or another resource, or not, if that doesn't work for you.
And it's looking at that age-appropriate language, and also what is the context in which they've heard the word? Because as adults, we're sexualized. We are aware of what words mean words. But if they've heard it in different contexts, we might go on to explain that, oh my goodness, that means this. And they're like, well, that doesn't make sense in how I've heard it. So actually, we might have jumped the gun. So actually not saying, where have you heard that from, in a way that makes them feel bad for knowing something or feels naughty, but in a way of saying, you know, oh, okay, yeah, I'll happily explain that to you, but can you tell me how you heard this, and then I know sort of where it's from, and then we can then talk about it. Like, more than happy, I just need to make sure that I know I've got it right, because I'm not sure about that either. And just that real honesty of sort of, oh, you know, that made me feel a bit uncomfortable, and I'm not sure about why that is, so let's should we have a look at that later, like when we get home, or just like XYZ.
Yeah, I love that. So really getting the information and owning our own feelings, right? I'm feeling embarrassed right now. That doesn't mean you have to feel embarrassed. That's just my stuff that's coming up.
Yeah. And you can say, because my parents didn't talk to me about this, or and just be like, but actually I really want you to know, and you know, because I think you're clever enough, you're mature, you're like, this will empower you or safeguard you in the future, all these sort of words that we do, because sex education is empowering and safeguarding, really. You know, for the same reason that when we hear terms from children, we use correct names. Again, it helps stop that shame. So this shame, if you look at all of your body, there's only one area of the body that we don't call by its true names. You know, we call an elbow, an eyebrow, but we don't call a vulva, you know, people call it a nunny or a foof or anything else like that, which is, I mean, great entertainment. But actually, if we explain, yeah, you can call it that, absolutely, that feels more comfortable. But please understand it is called a vulva, and it is got vaginas, the whole, and the clitoris is also there. These are all different parts of your body, and it's incredible. And yeah, if your friends call it that, or you want to call it that, that's fine. But obviously, we know it what its correct term is, because if we have a safeguarding issue, if we have a doctor's issue, like anything like that we need to talk about, then, you know, you can't ring up the doctor and say, I've got an itchy foof. And they go, which part of it? Well, the flappy part of it or something, you know, you can. And they will, you know, eventually work out what you're talking about. But it's much easier for everyone if you say, oh, my labia does this, or this has happened, or, you know. And we've had people before in doctors asking what this lump is, and it's a clitoris, because they've never been educated on their body. Because we don't, I mean, we label it in my classes, but we don't label it in sex education curriculum.
Yes, that is mind blowing.
Yeah.
So I know that you also work with the parents to do with their sex life, as well as how to educate their children. I'm wondering if we could talk a little bit about difficulties that parents might have for their own sex life.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So I talk to literally everyone, parents, non-parents, carers. I work with teachers. When I talk about sex, I talk about sex in all forms. So sort of I talk about sex toys, lube. We talk about absolutely everything. Love it. Absolutely love it in all forms. But one of the biggest areas and biggest conversations is sex and parenthood. And actually, we all have, I always say, we're all our main character in our own book. So we're all writing our own book. We're all the main character. And it has loads of chapters. And those pages are going to keep turning. You can't stop them. They're going to keep turning no matter what. And actually, parenthood is like a whole series of chapters. it's a whole new thing. And actually, that starts when you even, before you even get pregnant, for some people, that could be that trying to conceive like chapter. That could be, for some people, a journey that we're not expecting. You know, we're told in sex education quite a lot that a sperm meets an egg and a baby is made, but we don't necessarily talk about ovulation and how it happens, or, you know, so there's this fear. I remember being terrified as a teenager, like wanting to have sex, desperate to have sex, having sex, but thinking, oh, if I get pregnant, it's going to ruin my life, and oh my goodness, it could happen anytime. And I was always, thankfully, very conscious of contraception, really thorough with it. And this sort of extended on later on. And then when we decided to try for children, we got pregnant really quickly. We were very, like, really blessed with that. But I did think, oh my goodness, right. So looking at friends who've struggled, and looking at friends who've had different experiences with fertility treatments, you think, well, that none of that was explained, really. And it's not particularly inclusive. So it's sort of a difficult, like, right, everyone's fertility journey is different. So knowing that and knowing how that affects your sex life, because we want to have sex for pleasure, right? And on the majority of it, we should be having sex because it feels good. But there are times when we're trying for a baby, and perhaps the focus of pleasure isn't what we're focusing on our sex life for. It's focusing on for procreation or making a baby, reproduction. And so there's a time where it becomes kind of, I guess, a bit of a job, you know, because you're mapping and tracking and temperatures and ovulation charts and should I lay upside down for however long for gravity to do the work and all this. And so it becomes really hard to enjoy that pleasurable side of it, that orgasm side of it, that enjoyment. Because, you know, if you're cracking away and then you're thinking, right, okay, well, after this, is my temperature going to be right? And oh my God, you know, your mind is worrying, you're not concentrating on pleasure, you're not engaging with pleasure. And that is simply the start, I think, of the parenting mental load, the parenting sort of psychological effect on sex. Because as I said, sex is obviously not physical, just physical, it's psychological, environmental, and everything else. So just trying to conceive, if you think of that way, it's just the start of that psychological effect on your sex life. But then obviously we have being pregnant. So you've got like trying to conceive and like, oh my God, okay, we've done it in whatever way, whatever route, we've got a pregnancy. But then it's, can we have sex? Is this normal to have sex? Will I poke the baby? Will it be a problem? I'm uncomfortable. My partner doesn't feel comfortable with having sex with me because there's a baby inside me. There's so many different things. Our hormones might send you absolutely loop the loop. Some people do not want to be touched. Some people are horny as hell. I remember literally being at the front door and ripping my husband's clothes off one day and just being like, get inside now. And it just, everyone, and then the other times I was like, I stink of vomit and just, oh, stay away from me. Yeah. And your body isn't your own, is it? I guess, like, that gets taken away from you. Your body is you being a use to create a life, and your boobs change and everything swells. So you go from the sort of, oh my goodness, mentally, are we going to have a baby? Are we not? Is this going to be the time? Is this the sex that with this going to make the baby? Then you have, oh my goodness, my body's been taken over by a baby and everything's growing and I don't know who I am and am I attractive anymore and my hormones are all over the place and then I'm this big and my partner doesn't want to touch me because, you know, is it bumps in the way? What positions? That's always a question I get asked. What positions do I have sex in, like, with this massive bump in the way? And then you sort of have the baby and then you've obviously got postpartum sex. Now, my top tips for postpartum steps are, sex is always, take your time. The 6-week check doesn't mean you have to start having sex after 6 weeks. The 6-week check is just to see how you're healing. Like, that takes time. Your body, if you've had to tear, will feel different. There is scar tissue, and that takes time. Go at your own pace, remembering that consensual sex is reversible. Like, you can stop at any point. You don't have to say, oh yeah, I'm ready now, and then continue to go through with it. If it doesn't feel right, you can say stop. That's totally okay. You don't
and I think that is a fear with people. It's, oh well, if I say yes, then yeah, I've committed, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, no, you can just experiment and play and see, does this feel good? No, okay, well, we're not gonna do that anymore, and oh, this thing feels good instead.
And that's it. And my first thing I say in a lot of my talks is, sex is an umbrella term. It's not just sexual intercourse. Sexual intercourse is penis and vagina sex. Sex is any kind of lovely touching play that feels good, that sexually arouses you, that you feel desire for. That is sex, because that's inclusive. That is more pleasurable. That is obviously consensual. Obviously, sex for a lot of people with vulvas need some sort of clitoral stimulation to reach the orgasm and pleasure. So actually, that's not penetration. That's much more than that. And I think is it Dr. Karen Gurney who says about the buffet, like, it shouldn't be a starter, main, dessert. It should be a whole buffet. Like, just go wild. Don't go, oh, we've got a kiss, then have foreplay, then have sex. Actually, rubbish. Sex is that whole buffet of play. Do a bit of this, do a bit of that, take it out, stop, do this. Like, actually, that's much more pleasurable. And if we focus on pleasure rather than orgasm, it's going to be a much more enjoyable time. And actually, I think parenthood is a great opportunity. If you're stuck in that rut of one bish bash bosh, actually parenthood is a great opportunity to change that, to say, actually, I'm not healed properly, but can we experiment with this? And not just feeling that you have to give, if you have a male partner, for example, not just feeling that you have to give to them and ensure that their needs are met. Absolutely not. Like, this is a two-way street. So actually, how can you still feel enjoyment and pleasure and feel good in that sort of postpartum stage. And that might be with sort of clitoral stimulation. It might be with using lube, obviously, to make things feel more comfortable. It might mean waiting. You know, it might mean, you know, taking time to connect actually emotionally in that emotional intimacy rather than physical intimacy. It could mean all things, because with young children, babies, toddlers, whatever, there's so many factors. I think I find that comfort, obviously, your healing process is massive. So straight away, you've got to be comfortable. No one's going to enjoy anything if you're not feeling good. If you're thinking, this really hurts, but I'm doing the right thing, that's not good sex, right?
That's awful.
Right? And that's not, like, consent should be enthusiastic. You should be enjoying it. It's not for someone else. It's for both of you. And you know, some people say, well, I enjoy making them happy. Yeah, absolutely. But not at your own expense.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're still enjoying it, you know, you might not reach orgasm, but you've got to be enjoying it. It's got to feel good.
Yeah. And what I say to people is, if you're having sex that you're not enjoying, you are just creating more negative neural pathways in the brain to remind you that you don't like sex. And then you're going to dread sex, and you're going to want sex even less. Then sex is going to hurt even more, because your body is going to be bracing because it's expecting the pain. So if you're putting yourself through, let's say, penetration because you feel like that's what you should do, then what you're actually doing is making your sex life even worse, because your body is going to respond to that pain and that irritation and that uncomfortableness in the future. So what we need to do is stop, experiment, do something else, do something that you actually like and enjoy. And that is the best way to get your sex life back on track.
And that's like that's exactly why you stop faking orgasms. The more you fake orgasms, the more you're going to repeat the negative patterns of sex. And your partner's thinking, brilliant, I was amazing at that. They're going to love that. Oh, I'll do that again next time. And then you're thinking, oh God, they're doing that again. But you've not communicated positively that wasn't enjoyable for you. And yes, I think as adults, especially, well, teenagers is more so, but adults especially, we find it really hard to communicate with our partners of what our likes and dislikes are. But that's, again, the importance, going back to childhood, of touching your body and making sure you know what feels good and feels right for you. And again, that changes with parenthood. That changes, your body changes after pregnancy and birth. What feels right to you is different. And that happens. And this is why I always say sex re-education. I think we should all have a sex education lesson like every year, because actually it's just something we think of as a teenagers. And then that's it. Oh, you know about sex now. It's fine. Like, off you go. See you later. Into the wild. And actually, we should have something every year, because what our likes and dislikes change over time. Who we are changes over time. I think we all look back and think of us as teenagers and have a little bit of a cringe. Like, love the teenage me, but also, oh God. And actually, that's the same for sex, isn't it? It's the same for everything. You know, we all change who we are and our likes and dislikes, and our character, who we are, evolves within our story. And so that's the same for sex. So actually being able to sort of say, well, yeah, I know I used to like that, but actually I've changed and that doesn't feel good anymore. And now I've had this vaginal birth or had a cesarean. Actually, that doesn't feel good. Can we try this? That's a great starting point for that conversation. If you say you've stuck in a rut of bad sex, stuck in a rut of faking orgasms, if we need to get out free of jail free card, this is your time.
Yeah, for sure.
Actually, since I've had the baby, that doesn't feel good. Could I try this? And like, you know, you shouldn't have to always wait for something. But if you're someone that finds it hard to raise that conversation, that could be a trigger for you to do that. Yeah. So yeah, that is a whole, I mean, your body is an amazing thing, and it's not being disgusted by it. Like, actually, that's amazing. Take a mirror and look at your vulva. Take a minute and see, okay, like, first thing I did, I've had two babies, one vaginally, one cesarean. One was £10 12 and one was £11 12. They were absolutely enormous. And the first thing I did after having my first vaginally, I was straight in the bathroom with a mirror. I was like, I need to see what's going on downstairs, because I can feel everything swollen. I can feel everything sore, but I don't know unless I've looked at it and have seen what's going on, because I know my body. Thankfully, doing this job, I know my body. I know what's what. And I just need to see how it looks and how it feels, not for anyone else, but for me, and understanding that. And so that's a whole shebang. And then obviously having children, like, that life's just a nightmare. Like, I mean, love them. I have two. They're wonderful. But it's everything. I mean, from feeling out touched, so you're being touched all day by little kids, whether it's breastfeeding them or whether it's just general sticky hands and cuddles and everything else. I mean, again, love them. But you don't feel sexual at the end of the day. Your partner doesn't come home and you're not like, oh yeah, you're thinking, oh my God, take the kids away from me. I just need some space. Like, I'm overstimulated. I just need space to breathe. And then when your partner touches you, you get like, no, like there's another touch. It just gets too much sensory wise, you know? And so actually having that conversation and being like, actually, from you, I need these type of touches, because these little touches and stuff is too much. But actually a long hold or a hug, looking at what touches calm you and ground you. And if it's actually, I need a bath and a reset, and then I'll happily come and have a cuddle or talk to you. But I just need to take time for me, and understanding that if, you know, you can't give yourself all day. You need to have time to find you again every day, a little bit of time, whether it's like half an hour fresh air or a bath or read a book or just get out or scroll through Instagram, whatever it is, just to be like, okay, I'm just going to reprogram my brain to remembering who I am. And then it's that mental load, isn't it? Again, we talk about that, I think, so much, is especially in heterosexual couples, you've obviously got this mental load often taken on by women, the female role model, whoever that might be. And that is constant, from have we got nappies in, what's for dinner, have we bought grandma a birthday card, have we done this, have we done that, da, 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 constantly. And no one wants to be bent over in doggy style thinking about grandma's birthday card.
No.
You know? But we
sure.
Can't help it, we can't help it, it pops in, you know, you think, oh yeah, my goodness, I forgot that, because we're not able to be present all the time, because we're not sharing that load. But, you know, how often have we sort of been in the middle of sex and you look over and you think, oh, I need to do that washing over there, you know, or you're thinking, you're watching the TV instead. You got half an eye on the TV and half an eye on what you're doing. And that shows that, yeah, you might be having sex. And people say, oh, yeah, we still have sex. Yeah, we have sex 3-4 times a week. Whey. Well, that's great. But is it good sex? Because actually, we'd rather have good sex less often. Quality over quantity, obviously, like make sure that it's good sex less often. And we're, you know, emotionally present as well as actually having sex, because having sex is just a mechanical, we can all do that, but actually to have good sex is that next step. So sharing that mental load, and I think a lot of people, that's a conversation that it's uncomfortable for people, it's a tricky conversation. Oh, well, I go out and work, or I do this, and I'm doing, you know, I do a lot as it is. But understanding is the start of it. Understanding what the mental load is, I think, is a huge part of that life admin that keeps sort of the glue of the family together. If you have children, and what homework needs to be in, or whether it's non-uniform day and XYZ. So you've got body, obviously coming back, finding who your body is. Your body is, you've given your body to make children, essentially. Your boobs are breastfeeding. Your boobs, we sexualize breasts, and nipples are amazing, but they feed babies, essentially. And so all of a sudden, there's a baby on your boob when there might have been your partner before. So it's a bit weird, isn't it? It's a bit of a mind fuck, really, for our heads of, yeah, being like, oh God, like, well, just a minute. Like, I really like my nipples played with because to reach orgasm, but now this is,
Yeah.
And so it's just separating it in our heads. And yes, we've given it, oh, your body has changed, but your body has done something incredible, like amazing. Your body has done something really positive. And then just rediscovering it again, who you are, and kind of separating that sort of mother, father, parent bit of your brain from you and that identity. Because that identity is massive. Like, finding, doing that half an hour a day of finding you,
it's essential.
Huge. Like, I, for example, play netball. Because at netball, I'm not mum. I'm not a missus. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm just Debbie. It's great, and you just sort of, I'm not particularly good, but I'm just me, and I can run around like a lunatic for an hour and have fun with my mates. You know, it's great, it's really good. So it's sort of that touch, feeling over touch, that mental stuff, bodies, identity, comfort. Obviously, is it comfortable? Like, is it enjoyable? Like actually, do we need to take time, and do you need to look at if you've got any scar tissue, using lubricants? But it's not just, I think, using lubricants, the get out clause, I think a lot of people say, just, oh, just use some lube. And lube, everyone will say, every time I speak to anyone, is lube is the number one. If you have anything in your bedside drawer, lube, you get some lube, like good lube. Yeah. But it's not just plaster to fix everything. Lube is incredible, and it benefits everyone's sex life. I don't care who you are, regardless, lube is, yeah, amazing. But it's not just that. You need to also sort of look, actually, is my body healed, or is it different, or what's changed? And then at time, I think, no, I mean, no one who has time. So I think that's what everyone says with life anyway, isn't it? But actually making time and prioritizing time is really like, and whether you've got kids or not, that's hard, isn't it? You know, we've got all got busy lives, especially this time of year when it's like nice weather and everyone's out and busy and parties and events and work goes crazy and you just, you know, want to live life. But also we want to enjoy sex at the same time. That's part of living life and that's part of being happy. So how do we then prioritize that time, especially when you know you've got children and you don't want to book childcare or you can't pay for babysitters and stuff like that? So actually date night doesn't have to be out. It's remembering date night could just be sat, switch your phone off, switch your computer off, switch your TV off, engage with each other, chat. And that doesn't have to be like a cross table interview, like how do you feel we're doing? Oh, I feel we're doing okay. Oh no, I'm just a little Johnny Zilla. So actually that's really intimidating, isn't it? And I always say try and play a board game or do something where you're distracted by that and then the conversation will flow. Or there's I know Gottman do a love cards app that's brilliant for like those questions of like, yeah, how can we sort of ask those questions and how that starts off the conversation. Quite often you start off a conversation with a game or that, and then you find that the night is led away talking. And that I think people need to realize is much more intimate and engaging and sexually arousing, like sexually like desirable, than sex. Because straight, like, you talk the night away, you remember why you're together, you remember what it is that attracted you to that person. It really reignites you, obviously, something in your brain and kicks off all your, you know, hormones and everything. Just think, actually, yeah, this is subconsciously, we're reconnecting, this, we found each other. And that might not lead to sex that night, and it's not expecting, shouldn't expect sex that night or that day, but actually go, think that that's going to make better sex later on.
Yeah. I think this has been so eye-opening. Thank you so much for this. I wonder, before we jump off, if we could give one tip per section of pregnancy to birth. So let's say when people are trying to conceive, when people are trying to get pregnant, do you have like one tip that you can give the listeners for that stage?
So don't just focus on coming. Or ejaculation. So focus on the whole body. Make each other feel relaxed. Whether it's a massage to start, whether it's playing with your body, actually, that it's, yes, we know that you're having sex to make a baby. We know you're trying to conceive, but that doesn't have to mean you have to rush into penis and vagina, ejaculation, sperm, egg. Actually, keep trying to engage with the body and make it sensual, whether it's a massage or a bath or something beforehand to make you feel relaxed and enjoyable and still play. Like, it's meant to be fun. I think we forget so often that sex is still meant to be fun. Like, it's meant to be, we're meant to giggle, we're meant to enjoy it, and it's like how adults like play. So yeah, I'd say don't just focus on that.
Yeah,
bring other stuff into it, and that will naturally come as a conclusion if that's what you're aiming for.
What about through pregnancy? So let's say that was successful, people are now pregnant. What's the tip for that section?
So I would say looking at your positions. So positions, your cervix is going to feel uncomfortable in lots of positions, so find what's right for you. Experiment. You don't just have to start penetrative sex and stay in that one position for the whole time. Actually stop, move. Doggy style, brilliant. You can get cushions to sort of help prop you up in that position so you're not lying on your tummy. Actually bring yourself up, whether it's bent over a bed, say, with cushions in front of you. Spoonings is great where you're on your side. Just, you know, moving and finding what feels comfortable for you is really, really great. And if your partner feels uncomfortable perhaps doing penetrative sex, oral. You know, go crazy. There's and sex toys are still safe in pregnancy. So you can still, if your partner's uncomfortable, ask them to use a sex toy on you. Or do something else. That is, you know, as long as we're, you know, doing the usual thing, not sharing sex toys and washing them properly, then actually sex would go crazy. Oh, wow.
What about post-birth? So after the 6 weeks, what's the tip for this time?
I think it's like that romance, that sort of element of connection. Connection is going to bring better sex. Connection and communication. So find that first. Don't just think 6 weeks, tick, done that, or brilliant, off we go. And actually there's a lot of of women and people with vulvas who are like, yeah, we've already had sex, they're really proud of it. And actually, yeah, that's great, brilliant if that's right for you, but don't feel like it's something you have to do or something that, hey, like you're not in competition with other women. I think we as women quite often are in competition with other women, and you think, actually no, like you're not, like it's not a competition, actually let's support each other to find the what work for us and build each other up, and not everyone's body's the same, not everyone's experiences are the same and all the rest of it. So take your time for connection and communication, and then sort of find that space. Focus on the pleasure and not the orgasm. Does this feel good? Am I enjoying it? Explore and take time. Don't think, oh my goodness, I haven't come. Like, actually focus on the whole experience, I'd say.
And lastly, general parenthood. So maybe the babies are a little bit older, maybe they're even children. What's the main tip for now?
So I find a lot of parents are finding it really hard when their children are older and they lose their evenings. So obviously children, when they're little, they go to bed at say 7, 8, and you've still got an evening. So you can still find sex in that time. I say to a lot of those parents, if you can work from home for a day, you know, that lunch break, connecting in that lunch break, mornings, if you've got children that maybe go downstairs and watch TV in the mornings, then that's something there. Looking at sort of small children, if they do go to bed and you've got say a date night plan and a babysitter plan or something like that, having sex before you go out. Now I know that's, how do you do that? Well, actually book your table for slightly later, have sex first, because actually you go out, you think, oh, I'm gonna have such a good dinner and I'm gonna have some wine and I'm gonna have this, and then actually you don't really want sex afterwards because you feel like, well,
yeah.
And so actually when it's sex, have sex first, get the babysitter over a little later, get the kids already in bed, and then, you know, go wild, go and have as many puddings as you want. But you know, it's that, and it is difficult, different stages, and it's what's right for you and your family's routine. So find that niche, but carve time. Sex doesn't have to just be in the evening when they've gone to bed. Sex can be at different times. You just got to carve that time together somehow.
Yeah, this has all been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can the listeners find you?
So we can find me on Instagram. I'm at sex.debbie. I also have a website, sexdebbie.com. And yeah, that's sort of the main two. So come find me, come join me.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I'm going to post those links on the show note page. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you so much.